Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dog Pound, we hope to be with you with better news here on this Monday as the Browns did battle with the Ravens at First Energy Stadium on Sunday. It was a heartbreaker. I'm still not over it. I'm sure you all are not over it yet either, so we do want to get into your reactions at 216-578-0850 as the Browns snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, falling by the score of 23-21 to the Baltimore Ravens, the third consecutive game that the Browns have played this season that has ended on a last-second field goal. Two have been bad, one has been good, and the Browns now find themselves at 1-2 and 0-2 in the division after the first three games of the season. And this one was a tough one to swallow. The Browns in control of this game, took a 21-17 lead, and you felt like they were going to be able to put it away in the fourth quarter. They had multiple opportunities right after Miles Austin's touchdown late in the third, put them ahead 21-17. They got a Tashaun Gibson interception. Three plays later, could not turn that into points. Got down and had first and goal on the 9 against the Baltimore Ravens. Could not get any points. They had a missed field goal, a blocked field goal, and ultimately the team's 2-3 and outs on the day came at the worst possible time, their last two possessions, when a first down was all they needed to salt this game away. This was a tough one to digest, and certainly the kind of game that gives you comfort in the fact that, hey, this offense is much better than we expected. Hey, this Browns team can play with anybody. But at the same time, they've got to do the little things it takes to win. I thought the attention to detail down the stretch was lacking. I thought the defensive play early in the game was lacking. And right now, the Browns have to sit here and go into a bye week with 2 weeks to really stew on this one and figure out how to get it turned around when they take on the Titans in week number 5. But Matt Wilhelm joining me as always here in the Dog Bowl in Berea today. Matt, this one's a heartbreaker, and we got a lot to talk about, obviously, with it. I'll just kind of lay out the show quickly. We got the roundtable at 1:30. Kevin Jones and Jim Donovan will be with us. Solomon Wilcots, who called the game on CBS yesterday, will be with us at 2. Three topics with three-time Super Bowl champion Gerard Sherry at 2:30. We'll also hear sound from the head coach and the quarterback of the Browns. But for me, this was a tough one. This was a tough one, Matt, and it's a tough one, I think, to have, especially going into the bye, to sit and stew over for the next 2 weeks.
It definitely is. It's very tough and a really, really hard pill to swallow. And the few things that come to mind for me personally is growing pains. You know, growing pains with a young football team, growing pains with a new regime, a new coaching staff, still young coaching staff with not a whole lot of coordinators, you know, on this staff or former head coaches, as you see throughout the NFL. And that's why in which you see other teams hire these guys. They're like, this is a former head coach. When you've got multiple, you know, former coordinators or head coaches on your staff. And the reason why I'm speaking about this is because those times in a game when you need a second opinion, whether, you know, with time management or sure, timeouts or substitutions or scenarios, because they've been there and done that. And this, again, as a coaching staff, with Coach Mike Pettine saying, you know, it's on him. Those are the growing pains associated with a rookie head coach. And also, too, I think this team is still, even after training camp and now a third week into the season, they're still growing in their knowledge of the defense, as we can see, which we'll, of course, talk about. And also, too, they're also growing, you know, offensively, you know, building rapport with each other and figuring out their strengths and weaknesses as a staff, and also, too, offensively and defensively. And lastly, you know, the one thing that we'll discuss all week, I'm sure, is the special teams. You know, something that, you know, Coach Tabor has been, you know, kind of lingered on this staff through his now his third head coach, and to see the mistakes that have been made, and also, too, no differences being made on special teams. So they're hurting us, not helping us in many ways. It's very, very frustrating. But even for me, watching the game, every opportunity to win, a game that I was proud to say I was rooting for the Cleveland Browns because of the type of football they were playing, punching a Baltimore Ravens team in the mouth, never subsiding. To lose the way we did is very disappointing, and taking that into a bye is tough.
The good news, the Browns were the better team on the field.
I think they were.
Was, you can make that assessment. The bad news is it was not enough to win. The Browns are the only team in the National Football League without a turnover through the first three games, and yet they find themselves at 1-2. And when we went into this game, as we talked about the keys to this game, as we saw them, they needed to be able to stop the run, put the onus on Joe Flacco. Well, they gave up 160 yards on the ground to the Baltimore Ravens in this one, who had their third and fourth running backs rushing, both averaged over 5 yards per carry in this one. 160 yards on nearly 5 yards a carry on the ground. Joe Flacco didn't have to do all that much in this one. He was good when he needed to, drove them into field goal position to win the game, but ultimately, you needed them to stop the run. The Browns did not stop the run. We talked about special teams being key in terms of flipping field position in this type of a grind-out game, and they weren't. The special teams were bad. A missed field goal, a little bit of a low snap there, threw the timing off. That ball looked good for a lot of it, but the wind ultimately pushed it left into the upright, and it was no good from 50 yards. Then you had a comedy of errors, I thought, on the next possession that began first and goal from the 9 and ended up with 0 points for the Browns as that one was blocked as they got edge pressure and were able to block that kick. And then the other special teams play that bothered me was at the end of the game, Travis Benjamin's out there to return a punt and waves for the fair catch. He said a gust of wind blew the ball over his head. The ball does not contact the ground until the 22-yard line. And then proceeds to roll all the way back to the 7. So that's a 15-yard, at least, switch in field position there. And I think at that juncture in the game, that was huge. Instead of starting out past the 20, you start the drive at your own 7-yard line. And I thought that was a big kind of just a fourth quarter where the Browns had a 70-yard play to Taylor Gabriel, and that was it. All the rest of their plays in the fourth quarter allotted to exactly 0 yards. And I think the Browns will look back at this and they will say, while ultimately Brian Hoyer could have completed that pass to Andrew Hawkins there, they wasted one of the best games you're going to see Brian Hoyer play, and a game where Brian Hoyer was incredibly efficient. At one point, it completed 14 passes in a row, 19 of 25 for 290 yards and a touchdown, no turnovers again, and that still did not get the job done. The Browns are going to be kicking themselves about this game, I think, for a while.
They definitely will, and I think for those fans out there who may not understand why starting at the 22 as opposed to the 7-yard line is such a big deal is because, Kyle Shanahan has a whole, separate, type of play call from the 7, because you've got to think of, if we take a sack or we throw a pick, that's giving them the ball back in great field position. So they're only calling, certain plays or safe runs that they're confident in. As opposed to the 22, you're going to be safe still, but you've got a bigger chunk of that playbook, especially with the way Brian Hoyer was playing. So it's definitely frustrating, and I think the one thing that I will say, and you can say this about any game, but definitely this one is, from the head coach down to the 53rd man on this roster, there is a lot to learn from this football game in regards to clock management, in regards to the rules, which we'll get to, I'm sure, with Johnny Manziel being on the field, and understanding when to take your shots and when they're not. But also, too, there's a lot of things to learn. But, Nathan, I mean, there's a lot of stuff to applaud that this football team can play and beat football teams in this National Football League, which we could not say about this football teams over the past few years.
No question about it. This offense right now is putting up big time production, at least 21 points in all three of the games. If you had told me that the offense was going to put up at least 21 in these first three, I'd say the Browns are probably at worst 2-1, given how good we thought this defense was going to be. That's the area that I'm most concerned about right now, is this defense and the Ohio business machine. Hot topics of the day coming out of the Browns' heartbreaking loss to the Baltimore Ravens are as follows. Number one, what concerns you the most about the Browns from yesterday's tough loss? Number two, the defense really struggled once again against all facets of the Ravens' offense. How concerned are you about that? Did the team out-trick themselves with the offensive play calling? And finally, are you concerned about the play of Joe Hayden, who gave up the final two catches of the game that set up the game-winning field goal to Steve Smith on back-to-back plays? Are you concerned about Joe Hayden and how he has played thus far? 216-578-0850, that is the way to let us know here. And I'll kind of just go through these with you right now, Matt. What concerns me the most about yesterday's loss, number one and two are the same to me. It's the defense. The absolute inability to stop the run is to me, the biggest, most glaring weakness on this team and the biggest concern I have, because they're getting blown off the ball on runs up the middle. They are getting blown off the edge on runs to the edge, and teams are doing whatever they want running the football. There was the one drive where I believe the Ravens had an 11-play drive that resulted in a touchdown. Nine of them were runs, and they just ran and they ran and they ran it again and had no problem doing so. So to me, this defense right now, which was supposed to be the hallmark of this Mike Pettine-led Cleveland Browns team, has been a real concern. A real concern, giving up over 400 yards per game.
It definitely is. And again, you're playing Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks, and they're beating you, you know, with complementary football, meaning they're able to run the football and change things up enough that they don't have to, you know, have the onus of the football game solely relying on their arm. And again, we will lose a lot of football games if we cannot shore up this defensive side of the ball. And you made a great point. Not only are you getting blown off, but the one thing that I see is we're losing the point. You know, there's a point of attack on a run play of exactly where you want to start the ball, and where it ends up is obviously based upon the running back's read. But we are losing the point, whether it's the edge. They're getting the edge, they're capturing the edge, or they're blowing the edge off. You know, and also too, inside, as you said, we're being too reactive. You know, and again, when you get really good in this National Football League, and even in college as well, is when you're aggressive and you are pushing people around. And that's the type of football that we all thought they would play. That's what we expected as they pushed around our offense throughout training camp. You know, we hung our hat on not giving up a lot of points, being able to stop the run, and creating turnovers, and we have not done it yet.
No, we are +3 in the turnover differential only because we haven't turned it over. But this was a game Joe Flacco was not sacked once. He was really only under pressure, I would say, significant pressure. The one time where he got hit by Paul Kruger, that was the only hit of the game for this defense, and that led, fortunately, to the interception where he put the ball up in the air, but weren't able to get to the quarterback. They did get the one turnover from Kruger, but to me, it's the inability at the point of attack to do anything against the ground game. Now, there were moments. Of course, Dez Bryant had the huge play that forced the Ravens to get to a 3rd and 16, actually give the ball back to the Browns with about 2 minutes on the clock. They got the stop on 4th down, 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1. Those were big plays.
Very
That's
big.
Where you're saying, we're winning this game at this point. This
yes.
game is over. We must win this game. You get the stop, hit a 70-yard play to Gabriel, and yet are unable to punch it in. And one of the questions was, did the Browns out-trick themselves on offense? Too many gadget plays, too many given plays. I don't think so. They didn't work out necessarily in this one. And from talking to more people about the NFL rules interpretation, that play would have been legal because Johnny Manziel was in the game beforehand. Now, I don't know. I know the NFL rules people are saying no, but from talking to people in this building, on the staff, their understanding is that that play was, in fact, legal. It was only illegal because they snapped the ball while Terrence West was still moving. Had Brian Hoyer waited a beat to ask for that football, that's a big play and another opportunity to put points on the board there.
Sure, and again, for me personally, I have no problem with these trick plays. So no, the answer is no, we did not out-trick ourselves. What bothers me is our execution. Even on the reverse, it's a pitch to Benjamin coming around, forces him off his stride,
yep.
You know, which allows Terrell Suggs to kind of, you know, get his bearings and block him inside. Otherwise, if Benjamin gets that in stride, he has a two-way go on a 270-pound linebacker. I like that matchup all day.
Yep, me too. And it's one of those things where sometimes on those plays, and the other one, which was the fake reverse kind of to Gabriel, where he was going to stop and turn it back around, they were counting on, in that type of a play, Suggs to scrape right down the
Correct.
Line, which he should have
Flat,
done,
yes.
but didn't.
No.
And it ended up blowing up the play as a result. Now, had he scraped down the line, Gabriel is running wide open back on that right side. So I like what they were doing. Listen, this is a team that with a less than 100% Jordan Cameron, with, you know, Andrew Hawkins and Miles Austin as your receivers, is going to have to manufacture some of its offense. It's going to have to do that. So I have no problem with what it's done. In fact, I would say right now, Kyle Shanahan is doing a phenomenal job with this offense being as efficient and productive as it is. Brian Hoyer obviously being efficient and productive, the ground game, but a lot of it is being set up by the play calling of Kyle Shanahan, putting these players who are at this point in their career, for the most part, role players into positions to be successful and carry this offense. So I have no problem with what Kyle Shanahan is doing. Right now, my eyes, when I'm looking at where the issues are looking squarely at the defense of the Cleveland Browns and squarely at the special teams. Offense, they're doing a great job. Brian Hoyer doing a great job. And while at the end of the day, you could say, yes, should he have completed that pass to Hawk and the Browns win? Yes. But should it have come down to that one play at that point? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Special teams could have taken care of that rather easily. The Browns could have been up by a touchdown at the minimum, probably more than that, as they should have been headed into the end of this game. We're going to get your reaction and continue to break this thing down in more detail, get more specific here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. But I want to get into the psyche right now of this locker room, Matt, and get your take on whether or not you think coming off of a loss like this, where you basically had it won, everybody's upset. They feel they let one get away, a big division game that really could have changed the narrative about this team. Is it good to have the bye come now, or would you want to kind of – is this a loss – let me ask, phrase it a different way. Is this a loss that could have lingered and caused a poor performance the following week, or is this the kind of loss that you want to have a game so you can dive right into that preparation and just put it behind you?
For me personally, I think this bye comes at a great time. And the reason why is these guys are disappointed, yes, but that will wash away. Then they're going to get pissed and angry, you know, of the fact that that we're better than that. We should have won that game. And again, what this will allow them to do, but there also, too, is this bye comes at a great time because there are things that need to
Absolutely.
Get fixed. Because we can't have these. We go 12 consecutive, you know, from here on out, and there is no way that we can have, you know, these small little errors. Or, again, we really have to find out who we can rely on and who we can't and who's going to be the playmakers on this football team. So right now, after a disappointing loss the way it's been, it's to be able to, like, let's just right the ship right now and go on one heck of a run, which we know is possible in that middle portion of our schedule coming.
And it's a young team. So I think it's good for a young team to have this break because I think there are still teaching opportunities here. We're seeing gap assignments
Absolutely.
Be blown on defense. And frankly, there are teaching opportunities and learning experiences for this coaching staff because this was a team that was penalized 12 times in this game, and the Browns aren't going to beat anybody being penalized 12 times. And really, in the second half, you had two penalties for 12 men on the field and two timeouts that had to be called because of 12 men on the field. So that's something that needs to get worked out. That's a mechanical procedural issue that the Browns need to clean up because you needed those timeouts, it turned out, at the end of this game. You needed to have an opportunity to stop the clock, and they were wasted timeouts in addition to the penalties that happened with too many men on the field. So they need to figure out, you know, what's going on the sideline. You've got the head coach and the defensive coordinator both down there. Is that working? Who's in charge of these personnel groupings? Do we need so many personnel groupings? What's going on there? Because for that to happen four times and a half, resulting in two timeouts and two penalties, that's not good. And that's another thing that hopefully over the course of this bye, this young team and this young staff can get together and clean those things up. We're going to get your reaction when we return here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. It's Zagura and Wilhelm on ESPN 850 WKNR.